This is a topic here in verses that scared me. I mean, some of these are going to, this isn't going to be an easy series of lessons, I don't think. These are some tough topics and some things that, really do bother me. But I hope to at least the congregation can think. That's my goal, is just to think about some of these verses. And you may not see them the same way quite as desperate as I do, but I hope we can think and be able to consider what the scriptures are saying. Let me give you some other translations. I just had to look back at this and decide, is that really what that says? And so I looked at some other translations, even some that are much more liberal, and it kind of gives you the same gist. The NIV says, in these following directives, I have no praise for you, for your meetings do more harm than good. I mean, that is just straight down, and you might as well not be doing it. You're doing more harm than good in your assemblies. That is brutal. There's another translation, it's called the New Testament for Everyone translation. I figured that's about as liberal as you can get. And even it reads, what I have to talk to you about now isn't a matter for praise. When you meet together, you make things worse, not better. That's harsh. And that's a verse that scares me. Because that tells me it is possible that we can meet together and worship an assembly, and we can be doing more harm than good. That's what was happening in the city of Corinth. David Lipskin, I have a commentary by him. He says the actions of the Corinthians produce strife and separation instead of unity. And so I think that's what the gist of this issue with the Corinthians were, is that there was so much strife and discord within their congregation. So if you've ever read through the books of 1 Corinthians 1 and 2, and just kind of look at them in a broad sense, you figure out there was a lot of problems in the city of Corinth. There was a lot of problems in this congregation. But Paul is very honest with them. In fact, if you go back to the first part of this chapter, in 1 Corinthians 11 and 2, Paul gives credit where credit is due. In fact, he says, now I praise you, brethren, that ye remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I delivered them to you. So he's not a real negative with the Corinthians at first. He said, I'm going to praise you. That I'm going to praise you for the fact that you are keeping the commandments and you're keeping the traditions as I have delivered to you. But then we get down to verse 17, and all of a sudden we realize there were some aspects that the Corinthians were to be praised, and there was some that they were not to be praised. The lack of unity concerning the Lord's Supper was not such a matter where Paul was just going to overlook it and say, hey, y'all are doing great. He needed to talk about it, and so he did. The church of Corinth was very split. It was very fragmented. And I suppose we can look back in the first chapter of the first book of Corinthians and probably see where at least some of these divisions and schisms came from. In 1 Corinthians 1 and 11, it says, for it has been declared to me concerning you, my brethren, by those of Chloe's household, that there are contentions among you. Now I say this, that each of you says, I am of Paul, or I am of Apollos, or I am of Cephas, or I am of Christ. So there apparently were different factions within the congregation in Corinth, depending on who had converted them. And some say, well, I am of Paul. So Paul must have been the one that was most influential in their decision to accept Christianity. And others said, no, I'm of Apollos. Remember, Apollos was a great orator. He was a great speaker. He was one probably could just captivate the audience. And some people apparently really associated with Apollos. Others said, no, I'm of Cephas, or I'm of Peter. I would guess that was probably those of the Jewish persuasion. And others said, no, I'm just of Christ. So we have all these different factions. That really doesn't surprise me. That's kind of the way the old world was back then, especially the Gentiles. They were really big on who their teacher was and what form of persuasion they followed. What form of philosophy were they most in line with? And they would claim these folks. Shouldn't be like that in the church, though. He continues, is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Or were we baptized in the name of Paul? So again, Paul starts asking these rhetorical questions that are obviously the answer is no to all those. Christ wasn't divided. Paul wasn't crucified. We're not baptized in the name of Paul. None of those schisms or divisions should have existed there in the church. It even leads Paul to make this statement. Verse 14, I thank God that I baptized none of you except Crispus and Gaius, lest anyone should say that I have baptized in my own name. And so a lot of people, I think, have misunderstood that concept. If you just look at it without looking at the context, especially when you get to verse 17, for Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel. There's a lot of folks that I'd rather see. Paul didn't think baptism was that important because he said right there, he didn't send me to baptize, but to teach. But that's not what it means. Paul gives us a reason why he said, you know what, I'm glad I didn't baptize more of you, because it would have made this problem even worse. There would have been more people trying to claim the name of Paul, or the name of Apollos, or the name of Cephas. And Paul says, I'm glad I didn't baptize any more of you. He names a couple, Crispus and Gaius, and then he talks about the household of Stephanus that he kind of remembers after the fact. But he said, I'm glad I didn't baptize more of you. Verse 15, lest anyone should say that I baptized in my own name. Because there are all these little schisms. The pro-Paul group, the pro-Peter group, the pro-Paulus group, others that just can't claim for Christ. But all these divisions were causing problems in the church at Corinth. It also appears there was some money issues. As far as the wealthy people at Corinth were doing things a little different than the poor people at the congregation at Corinth. Especially when it came to the Lord's Supper. So these divisions had apparently found their way into the observance of the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. And that's what Paul is discussing in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, the last half of the chapter. Verse 18, he says, for first of all, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you. And in part, I believe it. So where do you think he heard about those divisions? I'm guessing probably from the household of Chloe. That would be my guess. That's where he got his information in the first chapter. Chloe's household was kind of ratting out some of the problems there in the city of Corinth. But I'm guessing that's probably where he heard it. And Paul says, you know what? And in part, I believe it. For there must also be factions among you, that those who are approved may be recognized among you. Therefore, when you come together in one place, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. And so there's the problem with the church at Corinth. They had factions. They had these little groups that were warring. This word factions right here, I don't know if you can read it, maybe a little small. That is from the Greek H-A-I-R-E-S-I-S. And so if I was going to try to pronounce that, I would say heresy. And that's exactly the English word that we get. That word factions means there's heresies. And that's a word we don't like to use in the church. That there's heresies. That there's people that are teaching things that are against the word of God. They're heretics. But that's what he's saying here. For there must also be factions among you. This was not right. The way that the church at Corinth was operating was not right. That we had different groups and factions that were fighting and warring against each other. So they were coming together for the Lord's Supper. On paper, they were doing what they were supposed to be doing. They were following the commands that Paul had laid forth, but they were not doing it as a group together. They were doing it in factions and in groups. And because of this, Paul says they are coming together not for the better, but for the worse. And to me, that's a very scary verse. He tries to explain a little bit. Verse 21, for in eating, each one takes his own supper ahead of others, and one is hungry and another is drunk. What, do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I do not praise you. I don't know what all the Corinthians were doing. It appears like that some were thinking the Lord's Supper, they weren't recognizing it as a memorial feast. They wanted to have a banquet. And some would try to get there early, it sounds like, and they weren't seeing it as a memorial, solemn feast, but they wanted food. And then others would come and didn't have anything, and they would just kind of get set to the side. And Paul says, should I praise you in this? And he says, absolutely not. I do not praise you. I'm not going to tell you you're doing good when you're doing bad. We live in a world now, unfortunately, that is so concerned with people's feelings. And I get that to a point. I understand the importance of self-esteem, and I understand the point of having people feel good about themselves. But when you're wrong, you're wrong. And there's nothing wrong with being told that you're wrong. If there's something wrong, fix it. Even if it hurts your feelings for a little bit, sometimes that's what has to be done. And that's what Paul did. He said, I'm not going to praise you. I'm not going to sit here and tell you you're doing a great job, because you're not. You're not doing this right. And in fact, you're coming together not for the better, but you're coming together for the worse. So I think there's a bigger issue at hand here. The Corinthians were coming together to fulfill their own fleshly desires and not to worship God in the way they had been instructed. They wanted to come together and have a big feast because that's what they wanted. And it didn't matter what they had been commanded to. And now we can extrapolate that concept across the ages. We can extrapolate it across the city. And all of a sudden we see that that's a common problem even today. Not so much worried about what we've been commanded to do, but people are worried about what they want. And they want to worship the way they want to. And what makes them feel good. And what they enjoy. And unfortunately, we're doing the same thing that the Corinthians were doing back then. Trying to fulfill their own desires and not worshiping God in the way that they've been instructed. And remember what Paul told them. He says their assembly was causing more harm than good. And if that's not scary, I don't know what I'm, that to me is a terrifying verse. Paul also wrote to the Galatians. This is the works of the flesh. You're probably familiar with this passage, Galatians 5 and 19. Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred. And then I have a bunch of them underlined. See if this describes the church of Corinth. Contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies. Almost kind of describes what Paul was talking about, doesn't it? Envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in the past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. Now we could probably say, oh, I get it. If we're a murderer, if we're an idolater, if we're involved in sorcery, yeah, I get that. Those aren't Christian attributes. I understand that. Well, I don't expect anyone like that in heaven. I don't expect murderers and idolaters and sorcerers, but selfish ambitions. Jealousy. I mean, we don't necessarily equate those on the same level as murder and hatred. But you know what? They're all on the same list. Those are all works of the flesh. And that's what he was talking about in Corinth. It wasn't necessarily that the Corinthians were a bunch of murderers and hateful people, but they were in factions. They were not unified. And they were treating the Lord's Supper in an inappropriate manner. I like that part again, 1 Corinthians 11 and 18. He starts out by saying, for first of all, when you come together as a church. I want you to think about that because we've come together as a church this morning. And I think there's some things we can notice. Number one, worship is never accidental. You have to come together. And I think that's important. It takes effort by the participants. It takes a previously agreed upon location. They knew where they were to assemble as the Lord's church. Whether it's down by the river under a tree or in somebody's home or in a building. Wherever, it's somewhere that was previously agreed upon by the congregation. See, it takes effort to worship. And that's what God expects. But we don't get to do whatever we want to do. We have commands that we are to follow. So then Paul says, well, you're messing it up. So let me re-explain it to you one more time. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 23. For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the same night in which he was betrayed. Now let's talk about that. Got thinking about that. In the same night in which he was betrayed. Isn't that a strange way to note time? And he could have said a whole bunch of different things that would have had the same meaning, could he not? Why did he describe time like this? Why didn't Paul say, you know, on the night of his arrest? Would that have made a little more sense? The night before his crucifixion. Or maybe he could have said, after his final Passover supper. But that's not what he said. He brought up something that was really negative. Something that was very human. Something that was one of his own. It was Judas Iscariot. He says, on the same night in which he was betrayed. I don't know why he chose that part of the evening to mark his time. I don't know why. I probably would have said on the night of his arrest. I think that's how I would have worded it. But Paul wanted us to remember that it was on the night that he was betrayed. Because that was a very human element to all of this, is that Judas betrayed Jesus. For whatever that's worth. On the same night in which he was betrayed, he took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, "Take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same manner, he also took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. This do as often as you drink it in remembrance of me." There's not to be any divisions. There wasn't to be some people trying to get there early and eating and others not getting any. It wasn't to be a banquet feast. It was to be a memorial supper. It was to have a loaf of unleavened bread. There was to be the cup filled with the fruit of the vine. And Paul said, "Listen, we got to fix this, because you're coming together not for the better, but for the worse, if you're not going to partake of it in a way that's right." Came across some writings by Ronnie Wade. I like this. He said, "True communion looks several different ways. One, it looks backward. And do this," he said, "in remembrance of me." We look back to the sacrifice that Jesus made. It's something solemn that we remember that someone died on our behalf. He said, "True communion looks inward." We'll read this here in a second. It is our responsibility to examine ourselves. We don't get to examine the person next to us or across the building. We examine ourselves. True communion looks inward. True communion also looks forward, because it's something that we do until the Lord 1 Corinthians 11 and 26, "For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes." So true communion looks forward as well. There's the Greek word for proclaim. "I declare openly," proclaim, preach, laud, celebrate. I've always appreciated Brother Terry when he does the table. He'll mention this quite often, that we are proclaiming the Lord's death by observing the Lord's Supper. We are preaching a sermon every time we partake of the Lord's Supper, because we are proclaiming, we're celebrating, we're preaching, we're lauding, we're honoring through our actions of partaking of the Lord's Supper. But remember, the Corinthians were coming together in such a way that was causing more harm than good. Isn't that scary? Isn't that a scary verse? That they were coming together not for the better, before the worse. He continued, verse 27, "Therefore, whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body." See, this is serious. It's not a party. It's not a banquet. It's not something where the rich people get to go first and the poor people go last. It's not something where you get to go for seconds and some people get the crumbs. That's not what this is about. This is a memorial feast. Again, Ronnie Wade, he made two points. I like this. He said, "But let a man examine himself." So he said, number one, that relieves me of any responsibility in your examination. So we partake of the Lord's Supper. I shouldn't be thinking about what you're doing, or if you're in the right state of mind. That's not my responsibility. Number two, it relieves you of any responsibility of examining me. We are to examine ourselves. And I don't know if the Corinthians were doing that. I get the feeling the Corinthians were probably examining one another. Oh, because some social classes were up here and some were down here. Well, some were of Paul, and some were of Cephas, and some were of Apollos. I wonder if all those Apollos people are doing what they're supposed to, like us Paul people are. I can just see those factions and divisions starting to rear their ugly head a little bit when it came time for examining themselves at the Lord's Supper. Don't ever forget this, that this is a memorial feast. It is a reminder of something that happened in the past. Got a couple pictures here. Now, this is September 12th, so we just had September the 11th. That's the picture of that memorial there in Ground Zero in New York. Haven't been there yet, but they say it's unbelievably solemn. It's got the two outlines there. Those are pools of water that constantly run where the buildings used to stand that were hit by the terrorist attack. I have been to this one. Okay, that's the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery. I have been there. You know, people understand when they go to places like this, there's a certain way to act. You're reverent. You're quiet. I show my history classes this every year. I have a video of this fellow right here. It may not be the same guy, but there's some people acting like clowns out in the audience, laughing and joking. And that fellow right there with the rifle stopped and explained it to him in no uncertain terms. This is not how you act when you are at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Because it needs to be respectful, reverent. It's a memorial. And those people get quiet in a hurry. Because if not, I don't know if he'd shoot him or not, but I wouldn't want to take that chance. Because hey, you do not mess around with that Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. This is probably one of the most famous memorials in the world. I don't know if you can see, kind of got a little glare, but that's the Vietnam. And there's people coming up there, scratching those names against the wall, pulling up names of loved ones. It's very solemn. There's not a lot of running around and playing. People aren't jumping up and down. One of my old favorite Three Stooges lines. It's in, you don't act like you're at Clancy's Pool Hall. There's a difference. There's a difference when you are somewhere where it is solemn. And where it's respectful. You don't act like you do out on the playground or at a pool hall somewhere. You're reverent. You're serious. You're sober-minded. And I think we understand that. If I was at that 9/11 memorial right there, I wouldn't expect to see kids running around and jumping in the fountain and running around. I wouldn't expect to see that. Because people know how to act. But what happens when we come to the memorial feast of the death of Jesus Christ? Now, do you see why Paul was so aggravated? That the Corinthians were coming together and treating this memorial supper in a way that it wasn't meant to be. They were not being reverent. They did not have the right frame of mind. They were looking at other people. They were trying to make decisions about other people. They're good, they're bad. That's not how the Lord's Supper is supposed to be. And if we do that, we're coming together not for the better, so why am I scared of this verse? Why am I so bothered by 1 Corinthians 11 and 17? Well, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, if it is possible to observe the Lord's Supper incorrectly, then we have to ask ourselves a question. Are we, in fact, doing it correctly? Are we partaking of the Lord's Supper in a scriptural manner the way that we are supposed to? Because if not, if Paul would tell the Corinthians, you're coming together not for the better but for the worse, what would he tell us? Would he tell us the same thing? Hey, congregation at St. Angelo, you're coming together not for the better but for the worse. Hey, St. Angelo folks, you might as well not even be meeting. That your assembly is doing more harm than good. Can you imagine being told that? So we better make sure that we are observing the Lord's Supper correctly. That we're doing it in a scriptural manner, that our mental state is right, that we're not trying to judge one another, that we are doing exactly as the Lord has told us to do. And so when I look back at 1 Corinthians chapter 11, where Paul begins to reiterate, beginning in verse 25, when he begins to reiterate what we are supposed to do, we better be doing what it says. That's why we make such a big issue of how many loaves are on the table, or do we have individual cups? Do we have fermented wine instead of fruit of the vine? That's why all those questions are so important to us as members of the Church of Christ, because we want to make sure that we are doing the Lord's Supper correctly. And not a lot of people are going to agree with us. And you know what? That's their decision. But we're going to do what we feel is scriptural and correct. Because I don't want anyone to ever say to me in the end when I'm standing at that long line of judgment, I don't want someone to say, hey, you encourage your congregation to come together not for the better, for the worse. That is harsh. That is harsh. Number two, if the Lord's Supper can be looked at in this way, are there any other acts of worship that can be done incorrectly and also carry the same warning? So that's the thought that comes to my mind. If we can observe the Lord's Supper incorrectly and have the Apostle Paul tell us you're doing more harm than good, is that the same case with our singing? Is that the same case with our teaching? Is that the same case with the giving of our means. These ideas, these items of worship, do they follow the same warning? If we're teaching in a way that is incorrect, if we are teaching in a way that is not scriptural, could that mean that we're coming together not for the better, but for the worse? And that's the thoughts that are in my mind. If we're not doing right financially with the giving of our means and the way that we use our money in the Lord's church as stewards, is it possible that we're coming together not for the better, but for the worse? And that worries me. And that's why we have to make sure that what we are doing is true and scriptural and correct, so that we don't have to worry about that. I'm still going to worry about it, but hopefully we know that we're doing what is scripturally correct. And here's the big question. This is why I'm scared. Number three, why do so many religious people treat the Lord's Supper so callously? I don't understand that. I don't get it. I just don't understand how some folks can just glaze over this as if it's not a big deal. Are they not reading what Paul said? Paul said you're coming together not for the better but for the worse. How in the world can you not take that seriously? What more could Paul have said to try to get people's attention? I don't get it. And some folks, I will observe the Lord's Supper once a year, maybe twice a year, you know, whenever we feel like it. Or I just don't get it. I don't get the lack of respect and reverence for the Lord's Supper. I don't understand how folks can do that, because that verse scares me to death. They need to read 1 Corinthians 11 and 17. They need to read it every day and make sure that they are doing what is right. Because I'm afraid there's a whole lot of people not giving proper respect to the Lord's Supper. 1 Corinthians 11 and 17. Now, in giving these instructions, I do not praise you, since you come together not for the better, but for the worse. Why are people not scared to death of this verse? Why is this not taught constantly? And I can't give you the answer. I know I started researching this a little bit, and I kept thinking, I bet if I start Googling this, there'll be a whole lot of sermons about the warning of 1 Corinthians 11, 17. Guess what? There's none. There's none. And I don't know why people can be so callous and why people are not scared of this verse. Because when I hear that we could be coming together to worship and it'd be causing more harm than good, that terrifies me. So we need to make sure that we are doing what we're supposed to do. That concludes the remarks I've had for this morning. We never like to close, though, without offering a song of invitation. If we can help you in any way, come forward and let us help you this time.